thanks a lot. And first of all, I would like to indeed thanks the organizer for inviting me here. And indeed, the talk that I'm going to present is focusing on the dynamics of particles in turbulence. And as you will see, the first part of the talk is a sort of a review of results which has been obtained in the last several years. And then the second part is going to focus on where we have been pushing our methodology, our numerical methodology, to describe more and more realistic particles, in particular trying to keep into account a finite size of particles. So let me start by thanking the many people with whom I had the pleasure to collaborate on the topic of particle in turbulence, and I'll move on. As I said, the first part is more review-like, so everybody here knows about turbulence. Most of you also knows about some of his works, so I'll go a little bit faster, but I thought it was also good to provide some information for those who are not familiar with the topic. So, introduction, a little bit of motivation, this short review, and then we will focus on indeed the point particle. So let me fix the dictionary terminology that I'm going to use for the rest of the presentation. When I talk about tracer particles, I mean particles which are so small that they move molecules or atoms. The particles which are supposed to be dense.
You have to just hold it up. There's no microphone.
There's no microphone?
Yes, you're being taped. That's all.
Okay, but it fell down.
Oh, you shouldn't have done.
Yes. So any particle are much denser than wetting fluid. Light particle, instead, a situation where I have a particle which is much lighter than that wetting fluid. So, for example, it's the case of air bubble in water. And large particle are particle where the size start to be comparable with the dissipative scale of turbulence. If I plot on this diagram where these different kind of particles sit, you'll see that they sit in different positions. So let me briefly anticipate some of the terminology I'm going to introduce later. So you have a relaxation time of your particle, which defines Stokes number, and also you have a density contrast, so this is the ratio basically between the density of the fluid and the density of the particle. So moving along this axis, you go from heavy particle to light particle. This is a situation of bubbles in water, and this is a situation, for example, of dust in air. And this situation, when you move along the other axis, the Stokes number, you are actually also changing the size of your particle. So these curved line here are lines which correspond to particle with the same radius. So to wrap up these figures, so you have a situation where you have tracers along this line, for example, and along these lines, and a situation of heavy particle which get confined in this region, light particles stay in this region, but as you move a little bit on the top of this figure, you inevitably go in a situation where the finite size of your particle become important, and this is going to be where I'm going to focus in the second part of the talk. So application, of course, everybody knows that particles are everywhere. Where you have a fluid, often you have also particulate, so either in nature or also industrial application, but also an interesting application, and it's where I'm going to be interested and I'm going to add, is, for example, a situation of marine biology, where you have not only transport by means of your fluid, but you also have reactive dynamics of, for example, plankton or bacteria which reproduce and die in the context of turbulent transport. So, if we focus on tracers, we actually have no modeling uncertainty, in the sense that the velocity of your tracer is just the velocity of the fluid. So your tracer, denoted with x, has a velocity which is just the Lagrangian velocity, and the Lagrangian velocity is just the velocity of the fluid at the position of the particle. So this is nice, it's just a different way of reinterpreting your physical reality, and also it's a nice way of benchmarking numerical simulation with experiments. There is no modeling uncertainty. It's also the only case where we can say something from the point of view of theory, and I'll briefly go through it. So this is just to fix notation, as usual, I indicate large scale with L naught, dissipative scale is eta. So this is the picture of a Richardson cascade, and this is the Navier-Stokes equation, which is the equation for incompressible viscous fluid. This is the one that we are going to numerically implement in all the simulation that you will see from now on. And what I want to say about this is that we have a nice mathematical framework which allows to describe the phenomenology which is observed. And the phenomenology mostly looks at quantity like velocity difference, the velocity difference across a distance r. You look at moment of this velocity difference, and these are the famous structure function. And this structure function are expected to scale homogeneously with some exponent which deviate from dimensional prediction. So Kolmogorov in 1941 predicted this exponent to be p over 3, but when you measure them, you find that indeed these exponents are different, and this can be explained in terms of a superposition of fractal sets with some fractal measure which is d of h. Now, this d of h, we don't know how to compute it, neither starting from the equation, neither in terms of some more phenomenological model. You can propose some model, but still, basically, the situation is that we have to measure this d of h either in experiments or numerical simulation. The point that I want to make is that for what concerns tracer, the knowledge of d of h allows you to make some prediction. So this is a situation where we understand something from a theoretical point of view. And quantities which are of interest range from, for example, from the acceleration, which for tracer can be written as a velocity fluctuation over a small time difference, which is the dissipative time divided by dissipative time itself. And this both quantity in the multifractal formalism will fluctuate. These are particular events taken from trajectories where the particle actually was experiencing a very strong acceleration. And this event with milder, with other milder event will contribute to the full statistics of your tracer going around in your field. Okay, without entering in the detail, you can be more precise and you can write down in the multifractal formulas what are these quantities, and you can end up with an expression, for example, for the acceleration, given some value of large scale velocity and some scaling exponent h, which will have its own probability distribution function and the probability which is given by this expression. Notice that this expression involves the same d of h which is used to describe the statistical property of Eulerian turbulence. So you can put all things together and write down an expression, for example, for the probability distribution function of acceleration. And this expression allows you to make a comparison, for example, with experimental or numerical data. And this is the comparison. These are data from some of our numerical simulation. And the solid line that you obtain here is actually not a fit, but the result of this integral, where the only input that you put is the expression of the d of h for Eulerian turbulence. So it's a nice success, because this is a complicated object. It is a very intermittent phenomena. You can see that you go to fluctuations which are almost 80 times the variance, so it's extremely wild phenomena. But actually what has been talking up to now is not really a Lagrangian quantity. The acceleration of a tracer is actually the same acceleration of the fluid, so actually this is indeed an Eulerian quantity. So if you really want to look at Lagrangian quantities, you need to follow the tracer in the time evolution. And the natural way to do it is to look, for example, at the velocity of a particle at a given time and at a time after a delay tau. And you now look at what are the correlations between this velocity. For example, it can be the structure function, now function of a time delay tau. And look if this structure function scale in some homogeneous way in the temporal inertia range. Temporal inertia range is those range of times between the dissipative time, tau eta, and the integrand time, tl. In particular, we have already discussed in the past. Yes?
When you use the d of h, I guess you calculate the d of h by a Legendre transform of zeta p versus p.
Well, actually, we used the expression coming from the Shi-Levesque model.
Okay.
But so, yes, you can do.
So the zeta p versus p is taken from the Shi-Levesque model?
Yes. Yes. And then numerically, yes.
And how many? Oh, the analytical formulas, we have all of it. Okay.
So we already focused a little bit, some discussion on the structure function of order 2, and this is somehow expected that for large Reynolds number flows scales as tau. And the question are, of course, if this is true, and what are the intermittent, if at all, scaling exponent of temporal structure function. So something here back, together with Eberhard, we have been trying to see where the situation was in terms of numerical simulation and experiments, putting on a single plot this quantity compensated with the right-hand side. So if the relation holds, you would expect to see a plateau. And actually what you see is that basically you have one point with zero derivative, but you don't see definitely a very big plateau. So this is actually, I don't think that much changed in terms of improvement of the situation. It's going to something we're going to discuss tomorrow. But you can anyhow look at the intermittency. In order to look at the intermittency in absence of a clear scaling range is, for example, to revert to a sort of a standard set similarity. So now what we do is to look at the relative scaling of a structure function of order p versus another structure function, for example, structure function of order 2. And in particular, we look at the logarithmic derivative between the two. So if this quantity here is a scaling with some exponents, then we would expect to see a range in tau for which this local scaling exponent is almost constant. And when you do it, you see this. So for example, this is the local scaling exponent of order 4, and this is the local scaling exponent of order 6, including some numerical and experimental data. Experimental data still from the group of Eberhard. And you see that you start nicely from value which approach the laminar behavior, then you find the dip, and then you come up to something which may be a plateau, but definitely is affected by larger errors. So we don't know precisely what. Yes.
I think what's important to say here also is that the tip corresponds to where the second order structure function has its peak.
Structure function.
About 2 tau eta. Right. I mean, this up there.
Is a peak, yes, which is.
Eta should be where the peak is roughly, and it should be because the correlation function goes to zero at 2 tau eta.
Actually.
This bottom there, you know, the
middle. It's a little bit more to the left, but actually the reason why you get the dip here is twofold. You can interpret it in two different ways, and both ways are correct, probably. One is that you have, for different order, you have different position where you match between the laminar scaling and the inertia range scaling. And now you are looking at the relative scaling of one versus the other, and so why you get this mismatch. And the second one is that this is also associated to the region where vortex filament contribute to the statistics. And this can be shown by filtering your trajectory or by reverting two particles which have some inertia, so that they selectively probe the region of your flow in a different way. Then these dips disappear.
But for second structure function, somebody tries to see a larger plateau by compensating not by the first power, but some different power.
Well, I think it's not a reason of
0.9 or 0.85 as a power.
I think there is no power here.
I mean,
you see.
If you look at the local loop without making a VSS, you have a continuous change.
Just
you see it here. You see it here. Otherwise, you would have seen, you know, some.
No, I mean.
Okay, in any case, the point I wanted to make is that still, you know, this is the data that we have, but you can again try to push your knowledge of Eulerian statistics in the Lagrangian framework by connecting fluctuation in space with fluctuation in time. And in particular, you see that, of course, you have a natural way of connecting a scale R with a time tau R by means of the turnover time of that scale. So this is a typical velocity fluctuation on scale R, and this is the size of the eddy, and this is the corresponding eddy turnover time. And if you say that the velocity difference experienced by your particle across the time tau is in the same order of the space velocity difference across distance r, then you can make some predictions. And again, this prediction, for example, for the structure function in time, are made in terms of the knowledge of the statistical properties of Eulerian turbulence, so of the D of H, of Eulerian D of H. Okay? So you can plug things here, you can evaluate your scaling exponent, and you can get numbers. And these numbers, actually, these numbers are in nice agreement with the data that we have within error bars. So this is actually something which is really predictive of Lagrangian statistics. You can also improve things a little bit more in terms of connecting. Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I thought that if you plug zeta 4 by zeta 2, you basically don't get a constant anywhere. Right?
It's here. 1.7. So that's what you predict.
But Grauer somehow criticized this way of relating Eulerian and Lagrangian. Yes? Do I remember right?
Well, when you compute Lagrangian structure function, of course, you don't know precisely what you are measuring in terms of longitudinal or transversal projection. So he's trying to improve on that. I'm going to show you now.
In this plot, the data is only flat if you take the experimental data and the theoretical data and average it. Because the theoretical DNS data goes up, experimental data goes down, if you average it, it becomes a flat. It's just an observation, okay? I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying there is no flat region there in this whole curve. I mean, you know, if you one would need to get really high resolution DNS or something to see whether, and this is for relatively large times, right? I mean, this is 10.
There are several reasons why you get problem when you go at large time. One of these is a lack of statistics, which comes because numerical simulation becomes expensive, or in experiments because the particle get out of your observational volume, so the number of track which contribute to this position decreases. So this is a difficult region. Nonetheless, we tried in this work, we tried to estimate in the most fair way what are the error bars. And then you need to see if your prediction is within these error bars or not. So the hope, and I'm pretty sure of this, is that in the future there will be experimental apparatus, but also the possibility to do numerical simulation with higher statistics, and we will be able to challenge this prediction in a way which is with smaller error bars.
Anyhow, Federico, there are better numerical data, right? If you have the figure from the PRL, there are the Chicago data that have a better numerical, better Platon, higher Reynolds, the black star. Yeah.
Okay, so if you let me continue, I mean, I skip the very fast about this. Maybe this is not very important. I just wanted to say that you can have a nicer model which connects the dissipative to the Nessian range behavior, and you can try to look at all the data which are available or which were available a few years ago, and try to compare with your theoretical understanding. So why I'm talking about theoretical understanding? Now I get, for example, to the question of Grisha. Our theoretical prediction for this set of data is the yellow envelope here. So how is this yellow envelope coming? This is actually coming because in this set of data you have data coming from different Reynolds numbers. So actually you have a prediction with different Reynolds number, but also with different level of intermittency. So we plugged here the D of H corresponding to longitudinal and transverse structure function, and then we made an envelope including all of this. So if you do this and if you put error bars on your data, you see that you find a nice agreement. But of course this is a sort of scatter comparison with experiments coming from different equipment, different groups, a different Reynolds number, maybe some have a better or worse isotropy, and different numerical simulation, again coming from different groups with different statistics. So I think that if you consider this, we can say that this is a pretty nice result. Yes.
Can you say anything about, I mean, if the time tau gets a broader any turnover time, you know, the large scales?
Yes.
Or larger?
Yes.
What would we expect for this Psi-4 to, for this Psi-2? Should it stay flat? I mean, should
there's just, no scaling for it.
There's no scaling anymore, so
yes.
Something has to happen there, right? I mean,
yes.
This curve has to do something.
Yes.
What will it do?
It will decorrelate.
If it correlates, it goes back to 2?
It will just go up, probably. That would be not a constant.
It just keep going up, right? It should go up again. I mean, if I resolve the flow completely up to the energy injection scale, which, and the question is for scales of the size. I mean, the big simulations now, you have actually, I think the new simulations, you can fit something like 4 integral length scales into the simulation box, right?
No, it would go to 0 because eventually it will go to 0 because your velocity difference stopped growing as you increase tau. At some point, it stopped growing. Zeta is the logarithmic derivative of this with respect to tau, but it just stopped growing this tau, so it goes to 0.
With respect,
so it
yes.
goes down to 0.
Sorry, because I was thinking indeed on the standard similarity plot, but versus tau, indeed the structure function will have to go. To a constant.
Okay,
yeah, we'll have to go to a constant, the derivative to 0. Yes?
The data you have for lambda 600 are beautiful.
That's why experimental data seem more.
Yes.
Yes, that's beautiful.
Yes.
But it gets slightly worse when you go to higher lambda.
Look.
It gets worse when you go here.
Yes.
These data are not referring to the same numerical code. These are different groups, different numerical codes with different statistics, so you cannot compare one with the other in terms of.
But, did we ever plot this against? We should plot the same plot against tau over TL instead of tau over TL. It would be also interesting to see where these codes cut, you know, where each individual experiment starts to cut off.
Yeah. So my idea was to go fast on this part. I thought it was, but okay.
That is why we want to have
I guess this is part of the discussion we are going to have.
Tomorrow, okay. That's why I'm asking, guys.
So maybe I should speed up. So that was for what concerns situation where we stand in terms of theoretical understanding and translation of knowledge from Eulerian statistics to Lagrangian statistics. When you start to have a real particle, that means particle which start to have some physical property like being heavy or lighter, they start to deviate from the material line of your flow, and the situation gets immediately much, much more complicated. And this picture here is illustrating why. This is the case of tracers, so very small particles. They stay uniformly distributed in the volume. Of course, it's an incompressible flow, but if you have a heavy particle, or even more for light particle, you immediately see that they like to sit and to stay in some position of the flow. So of course, the statistic that they experience is not anymore. The D of H as we know it, but will be sampled in some way which is complicated by the dynamics and the way particles like to spend their time in a region or another part of the flow. Another important point for what concerns numerical investigation is that now you need to model your particles. So how do we model our particle? Well, this is going to take from now to the end of the talk. But we start from the simple. So we started from the very, very simple, the tracers. And now we have particles which start to have some drag, for example, Stokes drag, or some added mass effect. So here, indeed, you can see that there is a typical response time of your particle, which is connected to the radius of our particle, viscosity, and another coefficient here, which is connected with the density contrast between the fluid and the particle. So this is the simplest equation we are considering, and we can think that this is a good approximation for the case of particles which have a diameter much smaller than the dissipative scale, and for a situation where the Reynolds number of your particle is very small also. Of course, we are considering a situation where you have no collision, so we put put in our numerical simulation many particles, but this is just to collect statistics. These particles are just going around, and it's like making at the same time this study of many particles, but looking at only one. So they don't actually have a back reaction of the fluid, and they don't collide among themselves. We could, but once you do that, of course, things get much more expensive from a computational point of view. And okay, in this simulation, there will also be no gravity. So this is actually the same slide, I don't know how it came. And this is in a single slide, basically the terminology. We already saw that you get a preferential concentration in space, but also if you look at the trajectory of your particle, you can see immediately the effect of inertia. The red one here is a tracer, and then you find the green, the blue, and this particle have a larger and larger Stokes number, and you see that they are going to filter out this small-scale vortex filament. These were particles with different properties released inside a small scale vortex filament, and this is another effect of inertia. This is the filtering of fast turbulent fluctuation, while this other effect here is the preferential concentration in some region. And if you now measure, for example, the probability distribution function of acceleration of particle with different Stokes number, you find that this probability distribution function depends on the Stokes number and get less intermittent for particles with larger inertia. The root mean square behavior of your particle also show a rather dramatic drop. So these square here are the root mean square value of acceleration of particle versus the Stokes number. And you can see that the drop that you have in the beginning is fully explained by the fact that particles have a preferential concentration. So how can you understand that? Well, it's quite simple. You can compute the acceleration of the fluid at the position of your particle. And these are the plus symbols. And you see that there is a very nice agreement. So the reason why you see these values of the acceleration here is just due to the fact that particles don't stay uniform in your volume anymore. Then, if you look at very large Stokes, what is dominating is the filtering effect, the fact that this particle filters more and more turbulent fluctuations, and indeed you can check this by taking the trajectory of a tracer and filtering it over a window, which is the same as the response time of your particle. And this is what you get with the dashed line.
Rodrigo, this upper curve, fluid acceleration and particle position, as my Stokes goes to very large, it asymptotically comes to this starting point at zero Stokes, or nobody checked this limit?
Well, actually, we didn't check, I would expect that it must, because here you get become ballistic, completely ballistic, homogeneous, and so you are sampling in a uniform way. I'm going to complicate the picture. So this is the same picture as before, but now in this bidimensional space. So before we were just looking along this line here, beta equals zero at, as a function of Stokes, so very heavy particles. But now if I look at a generic density contrast, I have to look at a bidimensional space. And this is the plot of the acceleration variance versus beta and Stokes. You can also look at the flatness of acceleration and then figure out what are the regions where the physics is more complicated. Indeed, you can see that this region where the flatness is almost constant is basically because this term here, the added mass term, is dominating. And the added mass term is proportional to beta, so it's telling you that if Stokes is big, this term is negligible, and your acceleration is just beta times the acceleration of the fluid. So you can explain quite simply this linear growth here. But of course, this region here of light particle with Stokes around one and the region of heavy particle are much more complicated to understand from a theoretical point of view. Okay, this you saw already, so I can think I can proceed. And of course, what you want to know, I'm going fast, I'll speed up. What you want to know is more quantitatively how to characterize where this particle go, because you like, of course, to make some model and to gain some understanding what are the statistical properties of a different particle with different properties. So this is one of the possible way to quantify the fractal dimension of the character of the dynamics of particle in this model that we are using. So you have the different value of Stokes along this line and the different values of beta here. And actually what I'm plotting is the Kaplan-Newark dimension or the six-dimensional attractor for the dynamics of the particle. So what you can see is that if you move along the line of every particle, you get a preferential concentration with a local minimum here. And light particles show a qualitative similar behavior, but with a much stronger preferential concentration. And instead, this is the line of tracers, and this also. Similarly, instead of looking at the six-dimensional space, you can look in space, measure, for example, the correlation dimension, and now you get a fractal dimension which is bound to be smaller than 3, but again, you see that for light particles, you get fractal dimension about 1, so it's telling you that basically you clusterize in filamentary structures. And indeed, in experiments, bubbles has been used to visualize vortex filament. Also, you would like to make, as I was saying, a model or a connection between the local flow properties and the probability of finding particles with different beta and Stokes. So, for example, you may want to categorize your flow in terms of rotational or straining regions and to understand where particles with different properties like to sit. For example, if we look at the probability that a particle sits, let's say, in an hyperbolic region, or in, well, this is the probability to sit 1 minus hyperbolic region, so it's the probability to sit in a rotational region as a function of beta and Stokes, you immediately see that light particles like to stay in vertical regions. And this is almost independent from the value of their density, as you have a particle which is even slightly less dense than your fluid, you basically almost immediately saturate to probability 1. Even if we know that it is only for particles with Stokes around 1 that they really strongly clusterize in vortex filaments. Again, to give you a phenomenological view of what is happening, these are snapshots coming from the same numerical simulation. So these are particles which were evolving in the same flow with different properties, and in particular, the blue one are light particles, and the red one are heavy particles, and you see that they concentrate in different regions. They kind of segregate. So this is what I call turbulence-induced segregation. If you think of chemical reactant, this particle, just because of turbulence, will never react because basically they don't come in contact one with the other. And it's also possible, for those who are interested, you can find the detail in this paper, it's also possible to introduce some observable to measure the distance between the two sets where the particle of one type, the particle of the other type, like to sit. And you can look at this distance, for example, here the distance is in lattice unit as a function of different Stokes and beta, and you can apply this for all possible couple of particles. So if there are no questions at this point, I would like to move instead on the more recent modeling and tests that we did for the model, which concerns the situation where you are really more realistic and you keep into account the case of finiteness of the size of the particles. So again, in this plot, we are going in this direction. And what you may ask yourself is, for example, what will happen to quantity like this? This is the acceleration of your particle as a function of beta and Stokes. Now, if you move along this line, you see that you are considering particle with larger and larger radius. And so you would expect that just because the particle gets larger, the fluctuation induced by turbulence on the acceleration should decrease. And so you will not expect to find an acceleration which is constant along this line, but you would expect to see some drop. And this is something that we
just
want.
Just to make sure for the people that are not specialists, these are all point particle data. now you're going to find that size particles.
Yes.
So that everybody who
yes.
is not a specialist, you know.
But now I will show a little bit better. I'm going to show also a little bit of motivation why we do this. And of course, the situation where this is most important, the situation where you have particles which are almost neutrally buoyant, but you may have some finite size, which indeed introduce inertial effect and let your particle deviate from the material line. And of course, biological marine biology application, this is very important. For example, you may have a situation of bacteria that look like this at small scales and look like this at the large scale. This is a picture from a satellite, and you see a formation of colonies of bacteria in this lake. Or, for example, another example which is quite obvious is plankton. They look like this at small scales, and at the larger scale they look like this. Okay? So moving from the application to where we stand from an experimental point of view, this is basically a collection of recent experiments on finite size particle in turbulence. Actually, what is interesting to notice is that one of the first papers to report data on finite particles was actually the JFM of Greg Vogt and Ebrard in 2002, and if I remember correctly, they were they were reporting this data to demonstrate that their particles were point particles. So they were actually not investigating the physics of a finiteness of size, but in that paper there was actually the first prediction of some of the effects that you get because of finite size. So typical setup involve, for example, von Karman flows and also wind tunnels. And I'm going briefly through them and explain why, for example, experimentalists are interested, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, why experimentalists may be interested in this. First, there are applications where this is important, but also for technical reasons, you may have larger particles, for example, because you want to instrument them. So you may have internally a sensor, like in this case. Or you may want, for example, to see them. And this is a situation where you paint your particle because you want to see how it rotates. Of course, you cannot do it super small, otherwise you don't see it. And this is, for example, a situation where the diameter of your particle with respect to the dissipative scale is 600. Is correct, Alain?
Like that, yeah.
So it's definitely not small. A very nice idea, at least I find, to have naturally buoyant particles with finite sizes to use this polymer, which can inflate, and they can grow very large. And these are experiments in Göttingen with d over eta in the order of 200. And I'll show you also a movie that you can also find on the web. So actually, let me go back 1 second. So actually, what was done here by Mathieu Guibert and the group of Ebrard was to put some fluorescent point on this particle here. So now that you are doing the tracking with your laser, you will see the coherent motion of 6 points. And if you look at the movie, you can see that there is a bunch of points which moves together, and this is your finite size particle. So you can probably also use this information to understand the rotation and the angular velocity of the particle. So these are other experiments which are also able to probe the range of diameter, for example, in this case between 1 and 45. And another experiment is from the US, again from 0.4 to 27, in the group of Greg Vogt. And to finish, not only with experiments, but also with a fully resolved numerical simulation by Holger Hohmann and Jeremy Beck. The problem of numerical simulation, which are fully resolved, is of course that if you want to study the property of a particle, you should put only one particle, otherwise you start to have interaction because of back reaction. So this particle is really modeling the boundary layer, the wake and everything, and so to have a dilute system you should only have one particle. And this of course has important implication on the statistics that you can collect, and so you may not be fully resolved in terms of having a very high statistics, and this can be a problem.
Yeah, but
the experiments, typically it's easier to run it for, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not easier to run it for long times.
But still they have to put one particle.
Yes.
Or.
You know, we have to have a realistic type of other things. And if you don't want them to interact, of course, you have to put one in. Right?
Yes.
Otherwise they get close to each other and they will interact.
Okay, so what I want to show now are some of the new phenomenology which happens when you have a particle with finite size. And the most notable point here is that as a function of the diameter of your particle, you see that the root mean square acceleration of the particle is decreasing as a function of the particle diameter. Now, this is something which is quite obvious to expect. And this is actually the original figure from the JFM 2002, which was showing for the first time this behavior. This prediction is actually just made in terms of estimating the pressure fluctuation across a distance, which is the diameter of your particle, so simple. And of course, you plug inside the scaling from Kolmogorov prediction, and this is what you get. These are more recent measurements. And so the other things which is interesting is to see, to look at, for example, at the flatness or the intermittency of the acceleration. So once you rescaled with the root mean squared, you look at the shape of a probability distribution function. And in earlier experiment, it was found that actually, once you were scaling with the root mean square, the PDF were collapsing. But actually, in newer experiments, we can clearly see that there is a variation as a function of the particle diameter. And this we are going to compare with numerical simulations. And another thing that you find is that the autocorrelation, the time of the autocorrelation of acceleration, is growing as a function of the diameter of the particle. So these are basically the three phenomenological things which emerge when you have particles of finite size. So as I said, the first part of the talk I was focusing on this equation. So numerical simulation with point particles, keeping into account added mass and Stokes drag. Now we want to improve this model. How do we improve the model? Well, we improve it very simply using this equation. So actually you have the same two forces, Stokes drag and added mass, but this term here are now averaged on a finite size. Particularly the velocity that you put in the Stokes drag is averaged on a sphere, which is the sphere surrounding your particle volume. And this added mass term here, the acceleration of your fluid, is averaged on a volume, which is the volume of your particle. So once you do this, and you can find the details, for example, in this paper, you have several advantages. You are able to implement some of the physics in a very effective and cheap way, cheap from a computational point of view. Let me briefly explain why. We have in our numerical simulation, we have a velocity field. And when we have many particles, we just look at what is the velocity and what are the terms of this equation at the position of the particle. So now, this averaging, we can do it in Fourier space. So we can take the velocity field, we can Fourier transform it by making this smoothening, and then we just interpolate these terms at the position of the particle. So we can do it at once, millions of particles, with no additional cost. So basically, the computational cost of doing this correction for finite size is independent from the number of particles that we use in our numerical simulation. So what were the disadvantages that we were observing for point particles? Well, just the opposite of the phenomenology that I just described. The acceleration was independent from the diameter, and this you can see, for example, from this plot. The acceleration PDF independent from the diameter, and a correlation time which is was showing a different phenomenology from what expected. So actually the modification that we implement in our equation are nothing new, but are just what are called the Faxian correction. And let me show you the remarkable difference that you can measure. So I want to spend some time to describe this picture here. This is the acceleration root squared, normalized with the acceleration of the fluid, for three different cases: light particles, tracers, and heavy particles. I'm going to call this not tracer but neutral particle, because this is actually density meshed but can have a finite size. PP is the point particle model, so just the first things I was discussing, and FC stays for Faxian correction, so I'm doing this averaging on the terms of my equation. And what you can see, for example, for neutral particle, is that for the point particle model, well, the acceleration started from the value of acceleration of the fluid, and it was remaining the same value despite the diameter of your particle. So even for quite large particle, here above 100 d over eta, the acceleration was constant. But once you correctly introduce in your equation the Faxian corrections, you see that your acceleration show a dramatic drop. Particularly here, you can get more than two order of magnitudes. The same things happen, of course, for the situation of light and heavy particle. But it's interesting to notice the behavior of light particle, which had a tendency to grow, because these were basically going to a value of acceleration, which was beta times the acceleration of the fluid. So light particle experience a higher acceleration than the fluid. But now, due to the combined effect of the finiteness of size, things ultimately will have to go down, so you can find a maximum in this curve. And this is something which would be very interesting to be actually verified experimentally.
Why light particles start from unity at this point?
I mean, everything for
have a little bit higher.
Everything for very small size has a Stokes which goes to zero, and everything which has a Stokes which is zero is a tracer.
Yeah, but here is d over eta, so I would expect that, I mean...
But d is connected to Stokes.
Huh?
D is connected to Stokes.
Ah, okay. So you're saying that as it goes down, it's also not light anymore. It's actually
a tracer. Becomes a tracer. Yeah. Something. Whatever is
the
very.
Strange that it happens exactly at d over eta equal to 2, as you. I would expect it more gradually.
Well, it's not exactly 1. It's some value which is close to 1.
Ah.
But if you see, I mean, the neutral is a. Is lower.
Okay, yeah,
it's also a logarithmic scale.
Not exactly one.
Okay, this is a different way of plotting things, and is showing exactly. Maybe this shows better indeed the behavior, because now we compensate also with B square, which is the contribution, in a sense, the trivial contribution coming from the added mass term, which has a beta in front. Okay. So if you plot it in this way, you see that point particle all fall on the same curve asymptotically, because Stokes is not important anymore, and of course you get something which is beta, the acceleration of your fluid. If you compensate with that, you go on 1. Just another way of plotting. Another interesting thing is to look at the flatness of acceleration. So if you look at the flatness of acceleration, you see that also this is non-trivial. For point particle, of course, things were remaining constant for larger size. But now you see, for example, for a neutral particle, you see that indeed there is a decrease. And eventually, it will go towards a Gaussian distribution here. So these things are the things that we measured in our numerics, and this figure here, for example, is showing in phase the probability distribution function of acceleration. And you can see here you have tracer, which is the most intermittent, and then increase the size of your particle, you become less and less intermittent. This was a comparison with the earlier experiments, and from this paper. And these are the more recent experiments that I was already anticipating, show now a change of shape of PDF as a function of the size of your particle. And if you can see here, this black dot will correspond basically to this data. So they correspond somewhere here. And then you see that the particles which are smaller would be more intermittent. They sit somewhere here. So if you can imagine that you move from here to here, you will see that the trend, but also probably quantitatively, the two figures are in good agreement. I'm sorry that I don't have a way of plotting on the same plot, but these I wanted to show because are the most recent experimental measurement, and now they show that this feature which was not observed before indeed agrees nicely with the Faxeng corrected particle model.
What did you do experiments? Oh, it comes that in one case they don't see any difference in size, in the other case they see it?
Maybe Alain can say something more because I think this is an experiment in Lyon.
Well, I mean, it's a different setup for sure. And then one was
this is washing machine.
Yeah.
This is
the second is the washing machine.
Yes. The one that was very short.
Yes.
But there's more statistics.
Well, the statistics is not that great, right? I mean, it was done to 10 to the minus 6. I wouldn't call it good statistics. You know, to 10 to the minus 8, I would say yes, good statistics. But 10 to the minus 6 is not that. But I should really go in and repeat these experiments without any resolution. And get better statistics. But now that you know that what you're looking for, I think it should be done. To go back and just take 3 points, do it.
I'm showing you the state of the art, I mean, of the data that you can find around, I mean, the one from our model, but also the experiment.
I'm saying it would be worthwhile now to, I mean,
I perfectly agree.
Just to go back and just do it after you know what you're expecting, just to go and retest it.
I mean, in your it cannot be otherwise, right? I mean, if you have a larger model,
of course.
The intermittency must decrease.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
How was this measured? Was this done with the.
That was, I guess, it's,
the laser Doppler, which also, but there they can know the position, but they know where it is.
They don't know. So this average is over the whole French washing machine. So
no,
I look
here.
What's the volume in the center? This one? Okay.
But with one ball, always. One single ball.
Well, you know, if you have too many, you can make a mess, you know, you get one. But, you know, you can record continuously and...
Yeah, sure.
Well, look, you should set up an experiment and just repeat it, just to make sure you get a bit better statistics.
Well, you have an experiment on this, right?
Can be done in Lyon, you know, or somewhere.
You have an experiment on this.
Hmm?
You're doing an experiment on parent size.
Yeah, so.
Do you have data already?
Well, we have this monster, I don't know. Maybe we do have data, yeah. But I don't know whether I don't think we have one particle here. I don't know.
Hmm?
I can ask Matthew.
Much of the scattered the tails in those PDFs is because the bin width was retained at a certain value, and so there's just one or two occurrences. A lot of histogram that shows you something better, you widen the bins as you.
I agree, but in any case, my point here was that, I mean, I'm pretty sure that by eye, you can more or less, and I mean, agree that decreasing the size of your particle, the tail get more stretched, and also, well, I put one on a side of the other to show that more or less also the quantitative variation seems to be in agreement. But I'm sorry, I mean, I didn't add the data from these to replot it on this, together with the numerics, but this is something that should be done. Just wanted to show you where we have been pushing this this model, which is very effective because treating particles point in the numerics allows you to integrate millions of particles, and that's a very important point if you want to know about the statistics. Okay, this is, let me skip to the next one, which is showing the same. So this is the variance of acceleration. Again, comparing with a different experiment, this was the earlier experiment. And this picture here is showing the most recent experiment in the washing machine. Again, the variance of acceleration as a function of the particle diameter. But where I want to spend a few words is about the flatness. Well, the flatness, as I said, in the beginning we had some data showing no variation, and these are indeed the data from the most recent paper about the behavior of the flatness, and this flatness corresponds to this PDF. For what concerns the autocorrelation time of acceleration, this is the trend that we observe from numerics and out of
the yes. The flatness in the experiments is now in agreement with the facts, with the fake way to use the facts and correction in the DNS, or is it just correlating
the trend? Well, these are the data that I have. I mean, I couldn't put it here, so you should look.
Put it on top of one of the other.
You cannot put it one on top of the other. No.
Well,
I mean, I could not put it on the same plot for you. You can look at them.
No, to understand how much this numerical way to introduce the finite size is, I mean, sooner or later it should be wrong.
I expect so, but we were not able to find. So this is about the autocorrelation time and. Again, this is from our numerics, the behavior as a function of the particle diameter. And indeed, here there is some disagreement in the sense that this newer experiment show quite a strong increase of the autocorrelation times. So this and I think the data corresponding to the numerics is this FACSEN. Okay, so. Another thing I wanted to add, still in the direction of improving the model, is that you may say I'm going to consider the fineness of size of a particle in terms of averaging turbulent fluctuations, but I would have also other important effect once I have a larger particle. So, for example, I may have a wake, I may have also a situation where the Reynolds number of my particle is not small than one, so I may have several correction, and some of these has been, for example, written down in terms of phenomenological forces. For example, these terms here keeps into account for finite Reynolds of your particle. This is the history force. And this is the model I've been describing so far with the FACSEN correction. And you may ask yourself how things change when you consider this extra force. And the term of reference that we have been using here are these fully resolved numerical simulations by Oman and Beck that just have a particle with its own boundary layer which is moving in the fluid. So there is no modeling, it's just a direct numerical simulation. And in order to do a comparison, we use a very small Reynolds lambda to try to match the same condition of the fully resolved numerical simulation. And then every time we have been playing the game of looking at the evolution of particle just with FACSEN, with Stokes drag, with the corrections to Stokes, with the history force, or the two effects combined. And so you can see different. The result of different model as you include or exclude this different effect. Okay, so the different quantity, I think that I'm running out of time. So the different quantity that we have been looking, for example, this is the deviation between the fluid and the particle velocities at changing the different modeling terms. And the dot here are the results of a fully resolved simulation. And this curve here is actually just the behavior that you obtain if you consider that the velocity of your particle is just the average of the velocity of the fluid. Okay, and these are keeping into account the simpler model and the other contribution. So you see that for what concerns the mismatch between velocity, it seems that these additional contributions are very important because, well, for larger particle diameter, otherwise this would be what we measure just with the FACSEN correction. But if you look at other quantities, like, for example, the variance of acceleration, we don't observe much variation. Again, here with the different colors, so you find our different modeling, and you see that the data are quite close. And this is a comparison with the fully resolved simulation. So I think that this is more or less where I wanted to go. We could also do some. It's a sign. It's a clear sign. So we could do some further improvement in terms of not making the average on a Gaussian, which is something that we choose for convenience, but just making an average like Fraxen will prescribe on a flat with a flat weight, and this will be what we obtain. And we have indication that this will be much more in agreement with a fully resolved simulation. So this is something to be done in the future, and I jump to the closing slide. So the point particle model with Fraxen correction seems to be extremely successful in describing also the statistical properties of particle with finite size, but much more work is due in terms of comparing with, for example, experiments, but also in having a more refined implementation with this uniform averaging. But I think that I convinced that indeed the simple modeling of particle is really effective in trying to figure out the phenomenology that can go on with different particle properties. That's all.
Thank you. Three questions?
I have two actually.
Two.
So first is that you talk about the essentially ESS in time, right, in the first part of your talk.
Yes.
Now, the reason we do ESS with S3 is that there exists a Karlan-Howarth relation. Is there a Karlan-Howarth or something like that for time-dependent and for the Lagrangian velocities?
No, nobody has demonstrated that, but on basis of a phenomenological argument, you expect a linear scaling for S2, so that's why it was referring to S2. But when you do a standard set similarity, actually you can take any other structure function as a reference. So you could do 4 versus 2, or I could do 4 versus 3.
Okay, and the second one is probably much more easier. In the second part, for example, in the Hoffman and Beck paper,
yes.
Do they take into account the action of the particle back on the flow?
Yes, yes, of course. It's a fully resolved, the particle is a rigid wall.
When you do Fraxen correction, do you do the same? Or?
In my modeling here, no.
So you have
it's one-way coupling.
So you have a local non-conservation of momentum?
Yes.
And does that change anything?
Oh, well, I don't know. This is an extremely interesting question because the model actually could be probably extended in also implementing a finite size effect on your fluid. This is a natural and very interesting direction, but I've not, we have done nothing yet.
Then we should take a break, maybe 10 minutes, and we'd like you to
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.